In the fight against the coronavirus, public health guidance has been stick to home when you can, and if you do interact with people outside of your household, stay apart and wear masks. Still, 6 months in, restaurants and many businesses are open. Some are returning to offices. So what is acceptable behavior, and how has that question, asked, of course, from an appropriate 6 feet away, impacted our friendships? Tell us, how have you navigated hanging out with friends in and around your coronavirus bubble? And what about when they expand that bubble outside your control? Maybe you have a new roommate. How do you navigate the rules with them and their partners and their friends? We want you to join us for this conversation. Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have two guests who are also going to join us for this conversation. The first is Margaret Willison, a librarian and culture writer. Welcome back, Margaret.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
And Camille Washington. She hosts the culture podcast, The Unfriendly Black Hotties. Welcome back, Camille.
Hi, it's so good to be back.
So, Camille, let me start with you. How are you in this, you know, depending on how you count it, anywhere from 6 month to 8 month of the pandemic?
Well, I appreciate the question. I've been telling people that I'm like pandemic good. So not good like for a normal period of time, but very, very good for a once in a generation, like lifetime event.
I guess that's good. Margaret, how about you? I hear you laughing at Camille's answer there.
I love that answer. What I've been saying is that, like, materially, I know myself to be better off than like 99.9% of people right now, but that things are still, as for me, as they are for everyone, at least lightly garbage, like lightly to severely garbage. And you get into this guilt cycle if you're basic conditions are okay, where you're like, oh, I couldn't possibly feel bad about being cooped up in my apartment because, you know, I don't have to worry about childcare. My job is stable. No one in my family has been sick, so on and so forth. But the thing is other people's suffering doesn't actually make me feel better. It tends to make me feel worse. So I'm just like very worried for everyone in the world. And then also unable to see my friends or hug people, which is a real trial for me.
Let's talk about the seeing friends and the trial of that. And Margaret, I'll stay with you for a minute. You live in an apartment in JP, 4-bedroom. Mm-hmm. How has that been? Have you been alone? Do you have roommates? How has that worked?
So I have roommates. I have three roommates. Two functionally moved out for the most part at the beginning of the pandemic to move in with their boyfriends, at least for various parts of the pandemic. So it was just me and my roommate Mallory in what we've deemed Spinster House. In September, my older brother actually moved into one of the rooms in the apartment. And in October, the other room is going to be occupied by a friend moving up from New York. So it'll be a lot more to navigate once there are four of us. And we're lucky we've got a lot of really nice outdoor space at our apartment. So, you know, we have people come and spend time on the patio or spend time on the porch. I was able to do a surprise party and concert with a local musician, Dietrich Strauss, on Saturday in the side yard with everybody staying socially distant from one another. But it's so much more to juggle. And once you add in all the other people, it becomes much, much more complicated. One of our roommates had a boyfriend who was coming and going, and he also had roommates. And that's just like a much bigger pod.
Yeah. So Camille, does that resonate with you? I know you live with your partner, but you're seeing some friends. And how do you set the rules?
Oh my gosh, it's so difficult. I mean, I've been trying to avoid using the language of rules because I think it's easy for people to feel like you're being judgmental when you talk about things in that way. So I've tried to keep conversations around like, you know, what's your comfort level? What's my comfort level? How can we meet each other where we are? And when I'm doing that, I have to understand, like, I don't have roommates. I do have like couple privilege. So my partner and I live together in a 2-bedroom in Cambridge with 2 dogs. So we are very well set up kind of emotionally for this time. And so for me, I have needed to be really sensitive to the different situations that everyone else is in.
So let me turn to the listeners, and listeners, join this conversation. We're all having this shared experience, and tell us how the pandemic has impacted your friendships, your relationships with roommates, partners, and where you have disagreement on quote unquote the house rules or what's allowed or what's a safe practice. What do you do and how has that affected your relationships? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's turn to Jay from Brookline. Jay, go ahead.
Hi there. I have what I've observed based on travels and recently been traveling to Arizona is that there's a big change in the tone and the nature of how you need to be protected. And there's a social pressure. I remember going to a bar, and the patron was like, well, you don't need a mask here. We don't need it. I can't hear you what you're saying. There's that, you know, as if they consider some of the groups even consider that this is like a boxing bout or something. Let me show what, you know, who is more important. So it's kind of a different, when you travel from Northeast to, places like Arizona, and you see the stark difference of how social distancing or wearing a mask or having, you know, washing hands is not considered, quote unquote, cool. And they actually have a name for it. It's called COVID crazy.
Well, and I'm going to take it back, and I'm glad we hung on with you, Jay, through the COVID crazy, because I suspect that's a term we will hear and use again. So turning back to Margaret and Camille, you know, I noticed Jay said in a bar, they said you don't even need a mask. Well, of course, here you can't go to a bar because bars are phase four and they're not even open in the Commonwealth. We do see mixed signals, both based on place, but also based on preference. And what do we do with that, Margaret?
Well, I don't know that we see mixed signals so much as mixed reverence for the signals. Like the science has been developing over time, and that's certainly been challenging. But the science right now is very clear. Like, it's not safe to be in an enclosed space with poor ventilation with a number of people whose pandemic practices you're not familiar with. Like, that's a very high risk situation. But because we don't have sufficient support for the businesses and for people working in the economies impacted by those kind of rules, we're just caught in this like capitalist death race, basically between like, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to respect the science that's been put forward about what is safe and what is unsafe? Or are we going to change what's available because it's necessary for restaurants to be open?
So in listening to you on that, I mean, and in all fairness, right, for the restaurant, it is necessary for them to be open. That is somebody's livelihood, right? It's a small business, and our economic survival is important. And this is something I'd be curious to hear from both of you. And since I just heard from you, Margaret, I'll start with Camille, but I'd love to hear from both of you on this. We do not seem to have a consensus on what is safe enough. And I wonder if either of you have thought about that, have talked about that inside your bubble and where you come out on that, because that feels like it's part of what's burning the fault lines between people and communities in this moment. Camille.
Yeah, that question of safe enough, it is a massively, massively difficult question. And I am not a scientist, so I will not pretend to know the answer. But what I do know is what feels safe for me based on all the guidance that we have received. So I have yet to even eat on a patio at a restaurant. There's a way in which I'm like, okay, I would love to see my friends. Of course, people are going out, they're having margaritas on rooftops. I love that for you. But the reality is, if you and me don't live in the same household, how can we be safely distanced from one another, you know, eating or drinking together on a patio? And so that has meant that that's just not a thing that I do. And, you know, the beauty of takeout alcohol is you can take that margarita and go to a park and sit far apart from your friends and have a lovely chat and just feel secure in that knowledge. So that's what I choose to do. It's mask on, you know, within, I don't know, 7 or 8 feet, because I feel like the whole 6 feet thing feel like people believe that that number is magic. And mm-hmm. I think of 6 feet as being a minimum, right? And so ideally, you might want a little more.
But that is public. Yeah, so this is the stuff that's interesting, right? Because you feel more comfortable at 7 or 8 feet. But the public health guidance is 6 feet. And that's what I mean, Camille, about safe enough. You don't want to go to a patio with friends, but maybe some of your friends do. Do you understand where I'm coming from on that? I'm so interested in these differences in what makes each of us feel safe.
Yeah, I think it's just about having that conversation, right? And having people around you understand where you're coming from. So I don't live with a person who is at high risk, but my father is at very, you know, in a very high risk category. And so that changes the way that I think about it, right? And so that, you know, kind of backdoor into my mind, you know, if you're my friend and you don't have that kind of situation with a parent or another loved one, you might have a different threshold for risk. I mean, we're at the point now, 6 or 8 months into this, as you say, however you count it, where we're in this for the long haul. So just sitting in your house all the time is not a viable strategy. But we all have to figure out what's the level of risk that we're each personally able to take on. And then we all have to be grownups and communicate, you know, what risk feels comfortable to us, to the people that we're trying to see.
And I feel like that communication piece, boy, is that at the center of what we're talking about. Margaret, I do want to go back to the phones, but beforehand, I want to give you a chance to reflect and react.
Well, it's funny to talk about all this stuff sort of academically, but like one thing that we haven't established is Camille and I are friends in real life. And we've had to have some of these conversations. We had friends who visited from out of state, and they and I feel comfortable doing like a quick hug as long as everybody has their mask on, right? And Camille did not feel comfortable doing that. And what happened is I stated my comfort level. The people who were receptive to it returned the affection. The people like Camille who weren't receptive to it didn't hug. And like the key thing is everybody communicated clearly. Everybody communicated that like whatever answer was given was going to be received with generosity and patience. And no one took pandemic choices as personal judgment.
Right.
And Camille, I do have to ask, did you feel that that was a warm and understanding environment where you could say, this is what I'm comfortable with, and you would get that support?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes.
That's wonderful.
And I just think it's important. Yeah. Just say it and always know, like, you know, I love you to pieces, but you know, we feel the way that we feel, you know?
Let's go to the phones here. Go ahead. No, Margaret, I want to hear that.
There's so much that we don't know yet. Right. So it's very hard to calculate risks when we don't have any of the figures to perform calculations with. So it's just everyone making their best guess, and kindness and patience are so important.
Let's go to the phones here. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Sarah's on the line from Salem. Hi, Sarah. You're on with all three of us. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you guys?
Well, thanks.
So I like to share my experience about our comfort levels. My boyfriend and I will live in an apartment like less than 600 square feet, and he's way more strict than I am. So that has been very challenging. And one of the funniest things was that we eventually agreed that we can have people over in the backyard and no one comes upstairs. And one day people came to the backyard and it started raining and people had to come upstairs, and he was giving me the looks like, oh, people are coming up, and I had to just tell him to just chill and we'll see how it goes. So that was definitely challenging for us.
That is challenging. And those unexpected moments, I think, kind of are part of what tinker with us, right? Or toy with us or mess with us when we're trying to establish these distinctions. Did Sarah's story resonate with either of you, Margaret and Camille?
Oh my gosh, that was like a story from my own life. Like last week, my older brother who lives in Chicago, he was visiting, him and his wife, and we had planned to have a picnic, but the weather was miserable last week. And so they needed to come inside the apartment. And my partner and I had a very similar kind of conversation via eye contact. And what we decided we would do is come inside. We'll try and stay as distanced as we can. We'll open a window and we'll keep our masks on. And we'll all get COVID tests ASAP. And that was just like, you know, but would I have done that for someone that wasn't my brother? Probably not. Like, and so that's the other thing that you have to factor into it. Like how badly do you need to see this person? Like, how long will it be before you can see this person again?
Have you both been tested and have you both been tested more than once? Margaret?
I've been tested, but only once.
I have been tested now twice, and one of the tests I got today.
I'm thinking of getting another one very soon. Yeah.
Margaret, why are you thinking about getting another one soon?
Because the tenor of things is shifting. My brother has moved in. We're going to be getting another new roommate in October, and just having that information to hand, just knowing that I'm okay right now, is important. I'm also really interested in trying to get an antibody test because I had a flu type sickness in February, and I don't believe that it was COVID, but we know so little, and it seems like any amount more you can know is a benefit.
Do you find that your friends, both of you, are responsive to that, are also getting tested, are thinking about, you know, what are we going to do when sniffles and coughs are, you know, sort of the order of the day in the colder months?
Great questions.
Yeah. Starting to think about that and starting to order my, like, more industrial grade picnic blanket that can handle, you know, sodden ground and can bear all of the fun weather that we get up here in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like thinking about testing, it's not something that we should be doing unnecessarily. But I think if you have someone inside your house unexpectedly, or you go to a gathering and someone hugs you without your consent, which is something that I have heard happen, it can be nice to just, you know, wait a few days and go get a test at one of the many pop-up clinics. I know Cambridge is doing them regularly. The city of Boston is as well. Just, you know, for that peace of mind, like for yourself, and also to be considerate to the people around you. That's how I think about it anyhow.
And well, it's been a pleasure. Oh, no, go ahead, Margaret.
I certainly know people who've taken extreme precautions and still gotten the virus and not really been presenting symptoms. So testing just seems very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, have you been tested? Are you satisfied with the results? How frequently do you feel you need to be tested in order to feel safe? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So I want to ask you both, are observers of the moment, right? You're bloggers, you're a cultural writer. We've been talking a lot among the Radio Boston team about this struggle with wanting to and desperately needing to meet the public health recommendations, dealing with the gap between what we hear from public health experts and what's actually allowed, for example, at the state level, and recognizing that there is a mental health component to being so isolated and so separated. Are mm-hmm. you guys seeing those things in conflict? And how, as observers of the culture, would you explain or talk about that? Camille, maybe you can go first there.
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I have a good answer.
Yeah, just a small question for you.
I mean, I think just being intentional about your relationships and like finding ways to make even virtual time together feel more like real and tangible. So, for example, I started a book club that's just me and my one other very good friend. And it gives us an excuse to, you know, check in with each other every couple of weeks and talk about something that is not related to the pandemic or our work stress or whatever, and just like connect. So I think getting like a little creative and stepping outside the box in terms of how we are relating to each other helps us feel more like connected in this time when we're just not able to hug and kiss and hang out in bars the way that we want to.
And how about you, Margaret?
You know, I have a slightly different orientation to this because I'm single and sort of have been trying to date during the pandemic, right? Which means engaging like a certain amount of risk, or at least contemplating a certain amount of risk, and asking the people in my apartment to also take that risk on. And so for a while, there was this terrible dilemma where like you would match with people and like consistently, if somebody was willing to meet up with you in person and maybe not be socially distanced, they were not taking the pandemic leave sufficiently seriously for that to be anything worth contemplating. That was like a very special category. and more I've been finding people who are approaching it sensibly, but are getting to a point now where they're willing to sort of take risks. And it's tough, you know, companionship is really important. Not having to feel like your life in this category is just on ice for a year is important. Mm-hmm. But there are stories like this wedding that we're hearing about in Maine, right, where it was 60 people indoors. And from that, a huge number of people have been infected and 3 people have died, none of whom attended the wedding. And you never want to be one of those stories. And it's so hard to control whether you're going to be.
Yeah. And the main wedding, when you said none of them having gone to the wedding, I think you mean of the 3 people who have passed away.
Correct.
That were
yes.
connected to that spread. Yeah. Camille, what's going to be permanently different now? In our last, 30 seconds or so.
I think something that I want to keep from this time is just the sense of intentionality that I have around my time with others and making sure that time spent with someone is quality time, meaningful time.
How about you, Margaret?
In a similar way, one of the really nice things about the pandemic, one thing that's hard is that Camille feels as far away from me in Cambridge as, my friend who lives in Omaha. That's tough because I'm used to having Camille feel really close. But
yeah,
the fact that all of my friends who are sort of flung across the country are now suddenly so available to me and all of these ways of spending time with them have become more plausible, that's great. And I'd love to be able to carry that forward.
That's Margaret Willison, a librarian and culture writer, and Camille Washington, who hosts the culture podcast, The Unfriendly Black Hotties. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.